Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Everybody, welcome to The Athletic Support, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens by theathletic.com. This podcast is brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Get your TV together and with the best of live and on demand. Learn more at directtv.com. So I am Marc-Antoine Gonnet, and as usual, I am with my friend and partner Arpan Basu, and I was browsing through the comments of his article this morning, and Arpan, people are concerned with your general being, with your general health, mental health,
yeah,
that is.
It seems to be the case. Let's try and dispel this notion right now. I'm gonna read the first comment on my story from Tuesday night, the 7-1 loss to the New Jersey Devils, where I kind of let Dominique Ducharme have it a little bit. First comment comes from Ethan. Hi, Ethan. I appreciate your concern, by the way. I'm not trying to make fun of you, but this really did genuinely make me laugh today. Ethan says, I honestly cannot comprehend what having a job centered around covering this team would be like right now. I have the great privilege of not needing to watch the games. Sorry that you have to, Arpan. I hope you can settle down afterwards with something a bit more uplifting or fun. I am genuinely concerned about the mental toll of having to care about this team as part of a career. It cannot be easy at all. Maybe read some of the great articles from the playoff run to remember the good old days. Thank you, Ethan. First of all, this podcast is not going to just be me responding to the comments on my story, but I have gotten this a few times this season. So I just want to tell everyone, I have a job watching, and Marc-Antoine does as well. Let's be clear. I think we share an opinion on this, is that our job is to watch hockey games, watch hockey practices, and write about them. It's not, you know, I'm not, we're not nurses in a hospital in the middle of a pandemic. We're not people who are dealing with some of the real world difficulties of our world at this time. I am every day appreciative of the fact that I have a job that is so much fun, even when you're covering a team as dreadful and miserable as the Canadians are right now. I would not trade my job for any other job in the world. I consider myself extremely fortunate. So,
it's part of the job to find, you know, new angles or fresh things to say about a club, whether it's winning all the time or losing all the time. The Canadians have provided us with some new material to discuss over time, mainly with Marc Bergevin being fired. We'll see if Dominique Ducharme will follow suit or not. But it's what makes it, I guess, harder or more painful is the fact that the way that they lose is so repetitive, and especially lately. And you look at the way the Canadians came out of their bye week after the All-Star break and performed terribly against against another bottom dweller. I mean, let's face it, the New York Jersey Devils are far from being a powerhouse, and yet they get pummeled 7-1, and in a way, it's exactly the same sort of behavior, the same bend and then crack mentality that they've been having, they've been showing the whole season. I think that's what makes it even more painful and exhausting. It's how repetitive it has become to watch these guys play the way they do.
Yeah, and you know, I think it was recently after one of the blowout losses recently, I kind of wrote that I wrote on Twitter that one day I'll give a course in a journalism school somewhere on how to write the same story 82 different ways. And it really is an exercise, as you mentioned. It does make you improve as a writer and as a reporter to look for those new angles and get creative with what you write. But to be honest, you know, my story after the Devils game was not all that creative. I feel like I've written it 5 or 6 times this season, but it is the repeated like beatings that this team takes. And frankly, you know, you look, so their last game where they lost by 6 goals, wasn't that long ago. It was in Minnesota. It was at the end of a very long road trip, against a team that's way better than the Canadiens are. And really one of the better teams in the league, if you turn, you know, using the word team to its fullest extent, the Minnesota Wild really do play like a team. The Canadiens do not. And so it's, you know, that had some kind of built-in excuses. And I suppose first game off the bye week, Jersey did play the night before, but they were also coming off their bye week and they did have that chance to play a game before playing this one, even though it was the next night. Maybe you could look at that as an excuse, but that would excuse the first period. And frankly, the Canadiens started playing better in the second period. I thought they were playing really well until everything
fell apart. They had 3 power plays in a row.
Yeah, they drew those power plays. You know, that was created through offensive zone time and through just improved play in general. But it's only after that they crumbled. You know, I mean, it's really, they got out of the first period relatively unscathed considering how poorly they played. They make it 2-1. You know, they have a power play to tie the game that goes nowhere. They give up the 3-1 goal and then they just fall apart. And this has been a recurring theme with this team this season, is that as soon as things aren't going their way, or as soon as their own momentum swings to the other team, it never swings back. And, you know, it's difficult because, you know, that game against the Devils, to me at least, there were so many things that happened in that game that just screamed to this team being poorly coached. And I think we've said it before on the podcast. I've definitely written it a bunch of times. You know, I do have a lot of respect for Dominique Ducharme. I do think he's a smart hockey person, and I do think he has good ideas, and I do think he's a modern coach in the sense that a lot of his beliefs and a lot of his theories on the game are rooted in modern views of hockey. But it's impossible after game 45 that seemed a lot like game 44, that seemed a lot like game 43, on and on and on. The same things coming up over and over again, and just seeing examples of how this team is not quite sure what they're doing at any given time, that this situation is getting really drastic. And actually, one thing I want to talk to you about, because we actually haven't discussed this, I'm kind of pouncing this on Marc-Antoine at the last minute, because the Canadiens find themselves not in a similar situation standings-wise, because at the time Jacques Martin was fired by Pierre Gauthier, the Canadiens were actually in the playoff hunt to a certain extent, but they replaced him with Randy Cunningworth. And obviously you remember at the time just what a massive, how that just completely blew up in the Canadiens' face, because obviously Randy Cunningworth did not speak French. It made for a very unpleasant and frankly ugly kind of confrontation with the Canadiens' identity and their connection to the people of their fan base. The media didn't take kindly to it. And, even though their situation standings-wise is far worse now, they do find themselves in a similar spot where it's quite obvious that in an ideal world where they didn't have this as a factor, that Dominique Deschamps probably would have been replaced by now. But the best replacement for him right now would be Luke Richardson. And obviously Luke Richardson does not speak French. And so I wonder, I would ask you, Marc-Antoine, as the Francophone in our happy couple here, you know, how do you think, because I think most people can look at the situation and recognize that it's not healthy. It's not, they're not, there's nothing positive happening with this team. They don't appear. They are not a well-coached team. They don't play a well-coached brand of hockey. Do you think that there would be any receptiveness, or maybe not even receptiveness, but like reluctant tolerance of going with an Anglophone head coach for the rest of the season on an interim basis, with the understanding, obviously, that a bilingual head coach would be hired in the offseason?
Right. Well, there would be reluctance. Of course, there would be a pushback.
But reluctant tolerance is what I asked, though. Reluctant, but tolerance.
Look, I cannot speak for others. I'll speak for myself. And I would tell you that it would be a decent thing to do. When you say that an Anglophone replacement, obviously you're referring specifically about Luke Richardson, about an in-house solution.
Yes.
So I think that, but if we start from the principle that the next head coach of the Montreal Canadiens, on a full-time basis will be a bilingual coach, I think that it's important for Jeff Gorton and Kent Hughes to find their guy and identify the right person and make sure that they get who they want. In the middle of a season, in a situation such as this one, it's not a guarantee that they would get the person that they want right now, that person would be available. If that the person that they are eyeing, and usually a good manager, and for sure Gorton and Hughes to a certain extent, but for sure Gorton must have started thinking about this ever since he got hired. Who am I going to replace Dominique Deschamps with? I think that if they don't find their best solution at hand available, you don't go hire a guy just because he speaks French. I think that this is something that the criteria has to be met for next season. So if they don't have their candidate, I suppose there's nothing good to come out of this season anyway. So what exactly? It's where, you know, you've been writing a lot about garbage time, about the fact that the Canadians were out of so many games so early in games. Well, the rest of the calendar, the rest of the schedule is garbage time. So you're not going to attract an interesting candidate out on an interim basis just to fill garbage time. It's got to be the person that's going to carry you next season and beyond. So if they're not able to find that person, if that person's not available, yeah, go ahead and make a Luke Richardson finish the season. I think that they'll have to come up with some sort of solution, because as much as they both said, both Gorton and Hughes, that Deschamps would finish the season, the way that things are going now, it's just intolerable for the players, because they... I think that there's been such a wish to at least go into that second half of the season, try to recapture any sort of fun. Kent Hughes discussed that with us. I think that as long as Dominique Deschamps just continues to ask the same things to his players, and the players continue to not be receptive and not be able to apply what he's asking them to do, we're in a dead end. And that, you know, those sunny ways that you would like to see in Montreal, at least to finish the season on a higher note, obviously they're not going to come. Even with the nice words, the nice intentions of some guys who say, well, you know, you got to start with a fresh mindset, it's hard to turn the page when you get beaten 7-1 against the New Jersey Devils, and Alex Ovechkin or actually his teammates are coming to town tomorrow. So to me, the status quo is becoming unbearable.
Yeah, it's the one thing I think that was kind of proven, I kind of wish I had written this in my piece, but, you know, in a lot of the other games, you could make the argument that, well, the Canadians just don't have enough talent. Well, that game against the Devils, you can't tell me that the Devils are a vastly more talented team than the Montreal Canadiens. They're not. When you look at, when you compare one lineup to the other lineup, they're comparable. It's maybe the Devils do have more talent than the Canadiens, but it's not by a whole lot, even if they do. And I don't know, I would argue that they probably don't, as far as I'm concerned. But it just showed that this is not solely a talent-based problem. It's deeper than that. And you just have to wonder about some of the damage that's being done, because, you know, the one thing about the NHL that a lot of people love to say, and it's never really been true, but this is really the most blatant example of it not being true, is that people say, well, there are no easy games in the NHL. Well, I'm sorry, the Montreal Canadiens right now, they're an easy game. They're the free square in the middle of the bingo card that, to any team, when they look at their schedule, they can basically stomp a W on that box in advance. They've won 8 games out of 45 games. And so you don't want this. And listen, I don't think the Canadiens accept losing. I think Josh Anderson was very honest and really gave the best reflection of how the players feel about what's going on. They're humiliated on a nightly basis. They know they can't compete. I mean, it's just a feeling of helplessness, you know, like Josh Anderson couldn't give any tangible explanations, but he's just like, this isn't right. We have to change something. We have to start playing. And it's all these kind of rah-rah sort of, now it's time to get serious kind of things. But it's the elephant in the room whenever the players talk about what's going wrong is that, well, you know, the guy drawing up the X's and O's isn't doing a great job. And I think that's, you know, if Lindy Ruff can get that version of the New Jersey Devils that have a lot of the same challenges as the Canadians had. Listen, they were missing their two best players. Jack Hughes and Dougie Hamilton were not in uniform. They were on their third or fourth goalie, much like the Canadians were.
You know, they're at their sixth. I think they've used 6 goalies so far this year.
Something like that. I mean, it's really, they've been off the scrap heap for goaltending. And so,
it's been their biggest issue this year. Let's face it, they'd be a much better team if they had any sort of goaltending going on for them.
Absolutely. And I think you could say the same thing about the Canadiens. Like, even when Jake Allen was in, and Jake Allen did fine, but he was not going above and beyond like what a Carey Price could potentially do, and that changes so much. But anyhow, I guess my point being that you have a Devils team facing a lot of the same challenges that the Canadiens have this season, and it looked like there was one team that had some structure to their game and there was another team that had absolutely none. And that comes down to one thing, and that's the reality of it. And so I think a big issue here, when you think back to that whole Cunnyworth thing, that was very early in Jeff Molson's time as an owner. I think it was his second season as an owner. And I think that really stuck with him. Like, the reaction to Randy Cunnyworth taking over, not being able to express himself in French, being challenged by it from the media, the reaction in the fan base. And then you look at the reaction of the hiring of Ken Hughes, like a perfectly bilingual Montrealer. Even that wasn't good enough for some people. Not saying that you should cater to those people. I definitely don't. But I mean, if he were to go with a unilingual coach for the rest of the season, I think there's a certain sensitivity to that from Jeff Molson. And frankly, I don't blame him, because it was very early in his ownership of the Canadiens. I think that's a lesson that he learned early on. And I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know this for a fact, but I wouldn't be surprised if he has a serious reluctance to go that way, despite what he's seeing on a nightly basis and the damage that it might be doing.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Well, then, okay, well, you're opening the door. Who would you see as potential candidates out there then?
I don't see any potential candidates out there. That's my point, is that if you don't go with Luke Richardson, I don't think it would be entirely fair to go. I mean, you could say Alex Burrows is the head coach and actually have Luke Richardson be the head coach, but I mean that would be dishonest and not genuine. But you do have Alex Burrows on staff, who's someone who's very comfortable speaking to the media, and you could just make it so that Luke Richardson's the head coach, but Alex Burrows is the one who talks to the media. I mean, that's an arrangement that's possible, but you're not going to bring in a coach unless you're hiring him for years to come, the way the Canucks did with Bruce Boudreaux. Like, unless you brought in like Alain Vigneault or maybe, you know, someone else who happens to be Bob Hartley, which I would argue in both cases would be a mistake. Because there are better candidates out there who are currently working for other teams that you can't get right now. I don't see how you do it any other way. You have to keep it in-house. And plus, on top of that, let's not forget, Dominique Ducharme just signed a 3-year contract extension. He's in year one of that contract extension. The Canes are still paying Claude Julien. They're still paying Marc Bergevin, and they're paying Ken Hughes, and they're paying Jeff Gordon. The Canadians are a rich team, but there's a finite amount of money here for a team that hasn't brought in revenue for the last 2 years, or significant amounts of revenue at least, and definitely not enough revenue to offset its costs. So I think there's also a financial question here in terms of bringing someone in from the outside. I think for many reasons, that's just not realistic right now.
Yeah. Well, what's one thing though that would be interesting to see, because we don't get to see that. I don't have at least any clear-cut example in my head, but to see a coach who's either coaching as an assistant coach at the NHL level or as a head coach in the AHL, who's being granted the permission to leave to earn a top job, a head coaching job in the NHL in the middle of the season. You know, because the unwritten rule, and that doesn't apply to head scouts, but let's say in management, the unwritten rule is if you are in a position to go higher up the hierarchy and get higher in the food chain, well, then you're given the permission by the team that has your services to just leave and take that new job. So I wonder if it would be the same when it comes to coaches, because, you know, we've discussed the case of Pascal Vincent on the pod earlier, you know, in a previous episode. And as everybody knows, he's the assistant coach with the Columbus Blue Jackets. You've got also, yesterday, with New Jersey coming to town, Alain Nasreddine could be an interesting candidate too, no?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, the Canadians played on consecutive nights against potential future head coaches being assistant coaches for those teams. Pascal Vincent was the last game before the break with Columbus, 6-3 loss. He was actually in the building to watch the Canadiens lose 7-2 to the Oilers the night prior to that. And then you have Alain Nasreddine coming in with the New Jersey Devils. He's a name that you know, we haven't talked about a whole lot, but like it's kind of, you know, with the Devils in town, he has a pretty interesting track record. He was up for the job that ultimately went to Lindy Ruff, but I think he was given some very strong consideration. And I know that there are people in the Devils organization who have a great deal of respect for the work that Alain Nasreddine has done with their defense, particularly with certain players. You know, he's got the coaching chops to be a name that the Canadiens should consider. I think one guy that's really thrived under him is Jonas Siegenthaler. you know, he's managing a defense with a version of PK Subban that's not what it used to be. A defense that doesn't have Dougie Hamilton right now, and doing a pretty decent job with it. I mean, it's really a lot of the goals that they've given up has really come down to goaltending. But that's a name that I think should probably be in this discussion when the Canadians reach that point. But it's not right now because they're not. I don't think the Devils are going to let Alain Nasreddine go in the middle of the season. I definitely don't think the Blue Jackets are going to let Pascal Vincent go in the middle of the season. And we can, you know, there's other coaches, and
we can add Benoit Groulx also, right. You know, head coach in Syracuse. He's another interesting candidate. So, but I mean, yeah, it's, so those are all outside options. Otherwise I think that it would come to Luke Richardson, but you know what, as you were mentioning that earlier, if we just put aside the linguistic aspect of replacing Duchamp, I think that where finding someone to replace him or at least not having him as head coach, let's not forget that the Canadians are about to head into an important rebuilding period, starting with the trade deadline, and they'll want to attract or get value in return for some of their players, and a lot of those players that could be on the move are underperforming, some of them severely underperforming. I'm talking to about you, Jeff Petrie. So if there is a change in coaching and that triggers a change in the way that they play and their confidence level and just their overall easiness being in that uniform again, well, let's say if we take Petrie's example, if that was to enable him to find his game, well, then you could reassure a lot of teams about the fact that Petrie still has plenty to contribute, and you could potentially drive up the price enough before the trade deadline to make a move without waiting until the summer. And same goes for potentially other guys, Yoel Armia, and you can name a few like that. So a coaching change might not salvage the season of the Canadiens. Actually, it would not salvage their season, but individually speaking, it could change the course of certain guys' seasons and potentially drive up their value before they're being traded. And I think that this is an aspect that should not be neglected.
No, I agree with that. And that's an excellent point. And you know, it's just a matter of changing something, because the Canes are limited in what they can change. They've already changed the general manager. You know, they can't continue to give up touchdowns. They can't allow 33 goals over five games. They can't allow, like, I mean, just all the things that are happening is just not good for anyone. And, you know, I was looking quite closely at Ryan Poehling, the line of Ryan Poehling, Yoel Armia, and Cole Caulfield in that game against New Jersey. Josh Anderson quite rightly pointed out that they were the only line that was going. You could see it on an eye test. You could see it through the analytics from the game. You could see it in all sorts of ways, scoring chances generated. I mean, Cole Caulfield probably had two of the better scoring chances in the game and shot wide on both of them. And that's a topic for a whole other discussion. But, you know, Ryan Poehling, I think if Christian Dvorak was deemed ready to go, Ryan Poehling was on the verge of being scratched for that game. And, you know, he practiced as a fifth center the day before. And to see the way he responded to that challenge, which is what it is, when Laurent Dauphin is ahead of you on the depth chart, that's a message. You know, that's a message that you're not playing well. And he got an opportunity to play, and he rose to the occasion. And you're just like, okay, well, there you go. That's there's something positive. You know, Cole Caulfield, I thought he had a good game. He hasn't played in 3 weeks and had quite the 3 weeks in between games. You know, so and I thought he at least was getting chances, which hasn't been the case in many games this season. Like, that was one of the games where he got, you know, the most, some of, you know, a lot of a decent amount of scoring chances. It's hard to quantify because there wasn't that much going on for the Canadians. But at least you saw from those two players, and even from Armia, he played a good game as well. But from those two guys, you saw a little bit of a bounce back. And then you look at the Devils, and in as horrible a situation as they're in, they have a player like Dawson Mercer who's playing in this rough season for them, but is still getting positive growth out of it. You know, I mean, it's that was nice for him to come into Montreal. You know, he played in the Quebec League for several years, played for Dominique Ducharme when he was 16 with the Drummondville Voltigeurs. So for him to get a goal and an assist, like, you know, for him to contribute in a meaningful way, kind of shows that you don't necessarily have to have a perfect environment for young people to develop. And the problem is that you can't, there's one thing to be losing games, but being competitive is another thing to be losing games the way the Canadiens are losing. And it's hard to see what positive growth their young players are getting out of it. I think Alexander Romanov has had some positive growth over the course of this season. Luke Richardson spoke about it today after practice, and I think he's right. There's a few mistakes every now and then, but overall, it's been positive for him. But, you know, Nick Suzuki's kind of gone a little laterally this season, maybe. He's learning some hard lessons as he goes. But the Canadiens need to find a way to make this losing season, even if they continue losing, they got to find a way to make it positive for those guys, because those guys are a big part of their future, an important part of their future, and you don't want any long-lasting damage to be done because they're giving up touchdowns to the New Jersey Devils. You know, that's another consideration, I think, when discussing whether to give Luke Richardson the reins or not.
Yeah, but yeah, there's been a lot of talk lately about you know, where would be the best place for those young kids, whether it's you know, whether it's Paling, Caulfield, or other guys like that. Obviously, Primo, that's not even a debate in his case. But for some other guys, where would they be better served spending the rest of the season, in Laval or in Montreal? And I think it's a fair question. And you can you know, there's been occasions this year where Caulfield looked outmatched playing against NHL competition. But I think that an even bigger issue through all that is the environment in which they are, you know, they're developing or not with the Canadiens this season. So you have to look also at the group of veterans and say, well, are they providing these kids the right environment to say, well, even though we're in a losing season, we can salvage this season and turning it in a useful and productive manner by doing this and that, by providing the right approach and the right mindset for the whole group. So I think that there's an aspect of leadership there coming from the older guys that has been simply insufficient this season, and it's been affecting the young players as well. So when you look at so you could say, well, Paling or Caulfield are better off being in Laval, but to me, part of it is on the group that should have helped them better. Of course, they're not lacing their skates. Those guys are each have their individual career to take care of. But at the same time, there's an environment that should be provided. And that's what the Canadiens had in spades last season and in that fluky run to the Stanley Cup final. But I think that they had figured out something when it came to the environment. And right now, this is sorely lacking. So that's why earlier on today, I asked Chris Weidman about, you know, without asking him if he felt as though some guys that had mailed it in for the rest of the season. But, you know, it takes efforts and it takes a certain level of engagement to say we take it upon ourselves to righten the ship right now and we'll make the sacrifices, even though we know that in terms of the standings, it's not going to change anything. But in terms of the process, we have to take it upon ourselves to change the course of this season and start having better execution and start a better application of the system and truly, you know, sink our teeth into it. So I asked Weidman, do you feel as though there's enough guys that are willing to that are there in their heads and willing to do it now, or there are some veterans that are actually saying, you know what, we can wait until last year, until next year to really start correcting things and say, and just be done with this season. We'll turn the page and we'll start next year. Can they afford to do that? Listen to his answer.
Okay. So, Marc-Antoine, we have, Well, this is kind of funny considering what we were talking about, but the Canadians just fired Dominique Ducharme. So
there you go.
There you go. So it's a good thing. It's a good thing we have all that podcast material on them, on why they should fire Dominique Ducharme. And so listen, we don't know the replacement.
They didn't announce who it was?
No, they didn't announce the replacement. So now we have all this stuff asking whether Luke Richardson could be a replacement, and we don't know if he's a replacement. So I don't know what we should do with this. This was pretty inevitable, eh? I think we were onto something recording the pod the way we did, but what do we do? I guess we got to record it. We just got to start over and record a different one later. I don't know. What do you think we should do?
We should ask the people on Twitter.
Yeah.
You know?
Do we stop or continue,
you know?
Yeah. Let's do that. Because I think there's a lot of relevant stuff that we just talked about. So let's just keep it. And then we'll, once we know who the replacement is and whatever, once we know the whole story, we'll do another pod. Does that sound good?
Yeah, sure.
Well, let's see what the people say. Maybe they tell us not to put it out. I don't know. Let's see.
We need to know who the replacement is before we go on any further. That's obvious. So.
All right. Well, we'll see what the people have to say, and then either we'll throw this in the trash or we'll put it out as is. Sound good?
Let's reconvene.
All right. Later. Bye.